Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
We have a liftoff.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. It's the 5 o'clock fire.
It is 5 o'clock. Congratulations. Hopefully you're off work. Luckily for you, old dirty, and for now, the blonde tip bomber, and a.k.a. Chris Santiago, is in the building as Tyler is out. And I haven't hit up. I don't think I'm going to hit up Tyler and see what his status is. I have not done so. I'm going to hit up Tyler Milner and see what his status is. Tyler is at Disney having a good time. At least we saw this morning he had a start of having a good time. 3 mimosas in with a picture of Goofy standing right behind it. So it looked like he's having a good time, but we're in good hands as Chris Santiago is in the building. And what's the latest is? This is 5 o'clock fire. And the NFL Pro Bowl. It's really already started. We saw the dodgeball. We saw some of the skill stuff. But the game will happen and is happening over the weekend. And the Texans, of course, have several players in the game. Nico Collins was voted in. Joe Mixon was voted in. Derek Stingley was voted in. And then also Laremy Tunsil was voted in. I don't think Laremy is there this week. And then Danielle Hunter, he was added to the list as an alternate. So he is there. Those 4 guys are there, Stingley, Hunter, Mixon, and Collins. So check them out this weekend. It should be fun to watch. One player, however, Clint, who is not there, and that is Texans quarterback C.J. Stroud. The invitation was extended towards him, Clint, but the report we're getting is he declined it, thinks that this is the start of his offseason and him putting his head down and getting right to work. So it looks like this is, Clint, going in a different direction than what C.J. Stroud did last year. Last year, of course, he experienced the Pro Bowl. He experienced a lot of things. Did a trip, I believe. Him and Micah Parsons went to Asia, did a tour there. They did stuff there. I know he played at the NBA All-Star Weekend. We saw him out and about doing a lot of different things. It looks like maybe they're going to change things up this year. One, do you think that was a cause to issues that he had last year, kind of returning back and what people have called a sophomore slump?
No, I don't think that what he chose to do in his offseason last year is weighed heavily in any way, shape, or form on the backslide or the sophomore slump that we saw. Now, I think in hindsight, I think it's you can argue that did he stay focused and did he make the most of his offseason after having a little bit of success year one? I think if you bump that up against either year, you know, the preseason going into year one from college to the pros, or hell, you ain't got to go far. Just bump it up to what you just said. He's the reasoning why he's not going partaking in the Pro Bowl stuff is I got to go back to work. I think in hindsight you can look at it and say that did he make the most of or approach his offseason last year with the same level of focus, intention, sense of urgency as he did the first year? I think it's fair to say that he probably didn't get all that accomplished in the offseason. It's part of maturing, it's part of living and learning. I'll tell you right now, as a fan, this right here, you know, saying it's time to get back to work, it's time to grind, it's off season. D'Amico Ryan's talking about, hey, go guys, to get away a little bit, and then as soon as the Super Bowl's over, get back and get to work. That is more along the lines of what was being said when D'Amico Ryan's That's first true. Got here. It was more along the lines of what Tank Dell and Nico Collins and C.J. Stroud and all these guys were preaching before they ever took a snap or played a down in the NFL. That seemed to work out significantly better for them. Let's not talk about the team overall. Just on the offensive side of the football, the product and the overall production from those guys seemed to be significantly better when they approached it as in, I'm here to do whatever the coach asked me to do versus I want to put up 1,100 yards and 10 touchdowns, right? I mean, so they C.J. seemed to play better, and the offense seemed to be
is definitely a different attitude approach.
Yeah, look, I mean, the offense seemed to be running smoother when everybody was bought in, and I'll do whatever the hell the coaches asked me to do to win a ball game. Versus we're going to make our rounds at the Pro Bowl, we're going to make our rounds at the Super Bowl, we're going to take trips to China, and I know there's a lot of people out there right now, Ron, that are like, man, what the hell are you talking about? It's his offseason. Let the kid do what he wants to do. No, that ain't it. I mean, I'm just telling you, that's not it. I don't believe guys that are chasing greatness, guys that are in the middle of a steep-ass climb to get to the top of this mountain, and knock off the Josh Allens, Lamar Jacksons, and then get to the Pat Mahomes and knock those kind of guys off. I don't believe that your offseason can be interrupted consistently by events, vacations, and things of that sort. I think you've got to lock in for months at a time, not 3 days here and take a vacay, 3 days here and go to the NBA All-Star Weekend, and 3-4 days here and go to the Super Bowl and make your way around Rodeo Road. Radio. He may have went to Rodeo. He was at Rodeo, too.
He was at Rodeo.
But that's here, so no big deal. But, yeah, I just beg to differ when it comes to these – when it comes to elite athletes that aren't just trying to play football and but are trying to compete for championships, I think it is very, very difficult to have your offseason broken up by a bunch of different distractions. I know we all look at it, a lot of folks out there look at it, oh man, let them vacay, man, let them get away from the game. No, man. That ain't it.
Yeah, for me, listen, I didn't have an issue with it. I don't think it was the reason why he took a step back. Like I just didn't watch him and think, man, that guy, he's kind of losing focus.
I agree.
I didn't love some of the, I felt like, especially when the way he kind of talked a little bit, some of the stuff he said, it was kind of playing with that line of confidence to chill out a little bit.
Yeah.
Chill out a little bit. So that was a little different. But, like, I didn't get the feel that this was something that was the reason that led to his struggles.
I agree.
Last year. I don't think it's ever a bad thing to say, hey, I'm going to put my head down and there's a different type of focus that I'm having right now. So it's not a bad thing. But I will say I don't think that his schedule in the offseason, what being at that white party as we saw him with the Kardashians or whatever, doing that, I don't think that kind of stuff was something that led to him struggling. I think a lot of the stuff around the team, now he did struggle, but a lot of stuff around the team, himself, I think that did, but I don't think his schedule did. We'll see. Like I said, I don't think there's anything wrong with, hey, buckling down and I'm going with a different approach, going with a more quieter approach. There's nothing wrong with that, but I don't think that was the case. It looks like some people agree. I agree with Clint. This is a career, and it takes year-round dedication for your craft. And I think he was working. I mean, it's just he just had some other things that were a part of it. Like, so again, maybe you watched it. You got your opinion. Maybe you watched and thought this is because he was out in Japan, and he was out at Indy for. I just didn't get that feeling.
Yeah, to be clear, I don't feel like his schedule and what he was doing had anything to do with the backslide and the friction between him and Bobby Slowick and all that. I don't. I do believe that he and the organization can look back and say, hey, I could have used my offseason a little bit more. I could have locked in a little bit more. I could have been a little bit more committed to the workouts. And when I say workouts, I mean everything that entails with the team and with throwing and with working out, with getting his feet right, with getting his strength right, getting his body right, and all of the above. Like, it's just unbelievably difficult, which I'll be honest with you, fans damn sure can't relate. I'll be honest, I can't relate because I didn't play 17 straight weeks. It is unbelievably difficult to prepare and do the things that you need to do so that when you report to camp, you are essentially an extension of a coach. And if that's a 3-month span that you've got to work, and it's constantly broken up by and interrupted by vacations, events, whatever it may be, that is not as effective as if you go locked down for 3 months and nose down, nothing interrupts my workouts, nothing interrupts my flow, nothing interrupts my taking care of my body, getting the rest I need, getting the recovery I need, and being the absolute best that I can be, period. Right? Like, I wonder, here's the thing, like, I wonder, we hadn't seen this part of CJ, but as he ages, it's going to happen. CJ's going to have to work a little bit harder in the offseason than most quarterbacks do on the lower body mechanics. CJ's going to, just the way CJ is built, CJ's going to have to work a little bit harder than some of these taller, leaner quarterbacks in the league. He's going to have to make sure his body's right. He's going to have to keep his body right. Right? And right now he's young and he can do whatever the hell he wants to. But as his game ages, Father Time's going to change the way you can do things. CJ's going to have to get all that done in that 3-month span. He can't show up to camp like some guys can and go, hey, man, I need this first month of camp. I need this first 3 weeks of camp. I need this to get my weight right. I need this to get my knees and my ankles right. He can't do that. So those 3 months, and I'm calling it 3 months, it may be four, I don't know what the hell it is, but those after the Super Bowl until they go to camp, right, that run right there is exponentially more important to C.J. Stroud than it is to your run-of-the-mill defensive lineman or your left tackle or your wide receiver. Like, C.J.'s got to be primed, locked, and loaded when you report for camp, not ready to get his body in football shape.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, the early Heisman Trophy odds are out, and Texas quarterback Arch Manning is the betting favorite to win the Heisman this year, Clint.
Yeah.
A guy who has never been a starter. A guy who we've seen a little bit of. We saw him start a couple of games this year when Quinn got hurt. But a guy that doesn't have a ton of experience. Texas should have a lot of talent around him. We've seen some glimpses. And now it is finally his time after a couple of years. Is this a little too much for Arch right now, though?
Oh, I think it's early. I think it's premature. Yeah. Absolutely. Look, and I'll be honest with you. I don't think at this point, and this doesn't mean he can't be a number one overall pick, and this doesn't mean he can't be the like a ridiculously successful quarterback at the college and pro level. But Arch Manning isn't a guy that when he throws a football, you go, wow. Right? When he runs the football, you go, wow. He's got some Sam Ellinger to him that from Texas, to use a Texas quarterback when he used to run the ball. He's got some of that in there. He can affect the game at the college level with his legs. I think he's got plenty of arm to play at the pro level. I think he's got more than enough arm to be a number one overall pick, but he's not a guy that you watch and you just go, damn. I mean, he ain't got that Matthew Stafford, Pat Mahomes, Josh Allen type of stroke and type of ability. In any way you slice it. And so for, I mean, I saw a list the other day, Ron. It was somebody, one of these college football outlets that said, if the draft were tomorrow and everybody in college football was draft eligible, Arch Manning would be the first quarterback off the board. I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, there's no way, no chance, no how right now, given what we've seen. Now, I understand the NFL is big on drafting off of just tangibles. It doesn't matter whether you pissed a drop or not. If you're 6'5 and can spin around the park and move well enough to affect the game with your legs, they're probably going to take a gamble and draft you. We've seen that happen. Will Levis, we've seen some big arms and some well-built guys get drafted earlier than they probably should. But damn, Arch Manning number one. I tell you where Arch is winning. Arch Manning's got to be the king of NIL since NIL started, right? This year? I mean, he's got to be the king.
And as I said, not even started yet.
Ron, if the Beck kid that just transferred from Georgia to Miami, I saw a solid report, $9.5 million. Money to get there, the collective and some of the NIL deals he's getting, $9.5 million. Now, I would imagine if Arch is smart, Arch is going to say, the collective, use that collective money that you would typically give me, use that somewhere else, just make sure you bring me Red Bull, who he just signed a deal with Red Bull. I don't know how many millions that is. But I think if he can get 9.5 to 10 million, I think he's willing to go get me 9.5, 10 million from these national brands and use that collective money on a couple of wide receivers and get me some players in here, right? But I think where Arch has got to be the king is in the NIL world. He has got to blow the doors off of NIL. And I'm talking about anybody in the country. Last year, he had a 6.6 NIL value. Now, I don't know if that means he got it. I don't know if that's cash. I don't know exactly how they figure that. But he had a 6.6 value. Shedeur Sanders had a 6.2. Quinn Ewers had a $2 or $3 million value. He was already double what his starting quarterback was. So he is going to be the absolute king when it's all said and done. That number is going to be astronomical.
Yeah, Drew Aller. Nussmeier, yep. Other candidates that have been in it. Cade Klubnik with Clemson. Some other candidates. The kid from South Carolina is maybe a dark horse one.
Yeah.
Also the quarterback. So, and Kevin Jennings, the quarterback from SMU, he comes back also as well. So there's some other ones. I know one you like low down there. DJ Lagway.
Like
could be Florida. Could be one with Florida. We'll see there. So Arch, right now, the betting favorite to be the early Heisman, on top of the early Heisman list. All right, coming up as we continue, let's go here, and I want to get your thoughts, and we'll discuss this. As the OC situation is the newest thing, and by the way, two other organizations have filled their OC roles, and we'll tell you those names. Spoiler alert, none of them interview with the Texans. But should C.J. Stroud, should he have input, him himself have input in the hiring process for the OC? We'll discuss that next.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. This week, it's all about buy 5 and get 5 free when you buy 10 mix and match participating items. Here are just a few. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Pepsi, or Smartwater beverages of various sizes. 16-count fresh baked cookies and pint-sized Ben & Jerry's ice cream, as well as 6 mega or 12 double rolls of Signature Select soft and strong bath tissue and 6 rolls of Brightly paper towels selected varieties. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Cubley.
All right, welcome in to The Drive. Been a fun day, fun week. Someone text in. What grown man goes to Disney without children? Very weird.
He's got children with him.
I was going to say, first off, he does have a nephew with him. And I will say, I used to think of it as being very, very strange.
I'm with you. I did too.
But I think I've talked to some people and gotten a better understanding that there is an adult section of Disney, and I'm sure many of you know it. I got another partner I work with, and him and his wife used to go all the time, even before they had a kid.
I didn't know there was a Disney community of adults that literally adult couples that go out there and eat and drink and enjoy good times. I did not know that was a place for childless parents.
Yeah, I forgot what area it is. They've told us. Because we're going soon too. They've told us areas like, oh yeah, this is the area. You get in there, boy, it's a good time. It's a good time. You get to drinking and all that. And I was like, really? Because all I pictured was just some grown ass dudes just going around, you know, saying hi to Goofy like Tyler did and getting in lines, riding rides, and it feels a little strange. It's a little strange without kids. It's like them adults at parks. Ain't got no kids. That's a weird ass look.
Yeah,
that's how I felt about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you.
I say, partner, you work here or who's yours?
Hanging out, man.
Just hanging, man. Lunch break.
Hanging out at the park with Goofy.
Yeah, yeah. So,
Daffy and him.
He's having a good time. He's having a good time out there, sure. And of course, we're in good hands as we have been the last couple of days. Mr. Chris Santiago holding it down. You generally hear him on at night after us, Area 45. But he is coming up and working and helping us out here the last couple of days. All right. I did want to run this past you and the people, Clint. There have been some moves here. The Dallas Cowboys, after they hired Brian Schottenheimer, they go and bring in a new OC, Clayton Adams. That's Clayton with a K, folks. Clayton Adams, who was the offensive line coach. That's a spot where you don't see a lot jump to OC. Quarterback coach, you see a lot. Tight ends coach, we've been seeing here. I don't know why, but O-line coach, you don't see a lot of. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. That was what Andy Reid was. But O-line coach, you don't see a lot of. But he is being called up to be, from Arizona, to be the new offensive coordinator under Brian Schottenheimer. And then the Jets. The Jets have agreed, and I told you earlier today, apparently – what's my man's name?
Nixon?
Good God.
Nick Cayley?
Yeah, Nick Cayley, excuse me, was thought to be their top choice, but he informed them that he was good, didn't want to pursue the Jets. They have hired Tanner Engstrand, the OC. He's their new OC. He was in Detroit as an offensive assistant with Aaron Glenn, so that's the connection there. Engstrand gets the job in New York as the new OC. So those are two guys, young guys, Clint, not any play calling experience with either one of them. And now they weren't interviewed by the Texans, but guys that have been hired make you feel a little bit better when you look at the names. Maybe is this a deal here that we are just going to see a group of OCs that are just guys that don't have a ton of experience, and that's the route that things are going right now?
Well, look, I don't know. I mean, that is definitely a trend. That is definitely a trend in the league right now, more so than it ever has been. The Clayton Adams deal is interesting. I know he's one of the better offensive line coaches in the league. I do wonder. I'm assuming Schottenheimer's going to call plays.
Yeah, so that's the other part is, yeah, Schottenheimer, I would imagine.
So, again, you know, you're back to it. Like Clayton Adams, you want to come in and be my O-line coach, I can pay you more and I can pull you away from from Arizona
give you the title
by giving you a title that's going to allow me to pay you more. And now your next step is going to be head coach in terms of title or actual play caller under a defensive-minded head coach down the road. So it's a step up for Clayton Adams. Now, I don't know if he's calling the plays or not. I'm going to assume Schottenheimer is. But it's a step up for him from a title perspective. And that makes it make sense. That's a luxury that an offensive-minded head coach is calling plays. You have the luxury of having an offensive coordinator that is a top-tier position coach, and you can pay him more and give him a title, and you can pull him in, right? That's one way to get it done. By the way, the Cowboys, nothing the Cowboys do from a hiring perspective is going to make me feel better about what the Texans are doing. The other thing with the Jets is
this is a Bobby Slowick situation.
It's a Bobby Slowick situation, but it's more than just the relationship with the head coach. It's an offense that's starting completely over. Again, you'd like to hit the nail on the head, and you'd like for the Engstrom guy to work out and be perfect, but you're in a rebuild, and particularly on the offensive side of the football, you're trying to feel some things out. If you've got to fire your offensive coordinator in a couple years because somebody else is available that you know is better, not because you want to, but because somebody else is available that you know is better, then you make that move. But this is, again, the Jets are where the Texans were 2 years ago. The Tanner Engstrom guy is to Aaron Glenn what Bobby Slowick was to D'Amico Ryans. Neither one of those make me feel anything different about what I'm watching with the Texans. When I look at the Texans, Ron, they're trying to go from division winners, divisional round of the playoffs, to AFC championship and contend for a Super Bowl. They're trying to take advantage of C.J. Stroud's rookie contract. That is a huge advantage. You got two, maybe three more years to get that done. This next OC is going to be the last OC that has the ability to benefit greatly from C.J. Stroud's rookie contract. This is an extremely different hire than either one of those organizations, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we'll see. But it does seem like, even with all the other ones, young and inexperienced has seemed to be what we're seeing a lot from the OCs.
Oh, look, Ron, there is no doubt about it that the trend in the NFL is young and inexperienced play callers, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, getting that opportunity. And I just getting that title, I guess I should say. I don't know, man. You look at the teams that we're watching this week, or I'm sorry, next week in Kansas City and Philly. Both of them have, I would say, pretty proven guys on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
You can go back to the AFC and NFC championship games.
Three of them have been head coaches, and the only one that hasn't is about to be.
Go back. Yeah. I mean, go back to the AFC and NFC championship game. And you look up and you got Cliff Kingsbury calling the plays offensively for the Washington Commanders. And then on the flip side of that thing, you got the Buffalo Bills, Joe Brady, who doesn't have the longest of a laundry list, but boy, he's had some monster seasons play calling at the NFL and really at the college level, and some good ones at the NFL level. So I don't know if I can go beyond that, Ron, can you, from a play caller standpoint on both sides of the ball, I got the AFC NFC championship. What the play callers look like? The teams got eliminated in the round before that. It would be the Texans, obviously. Texans would be one of them.
Yeah, and
the Rams would be one of them.
Rams, yeah, those are head coach kind of call teams. So, yeah, it is. I think we have the Bucs with Liam Cohen was the guy there. Like, we got some guys that are like, I mean, if you just look at it here. Steve Spagnuolo, former head coach, coordinator forever, multiple teams. Kellen Moore is about to be a head coach, was a former coordinator at Dallas before this one. Vic Mangio, former head coach for the Broncos,
yep,
been around for years. Matt Nagy, former
head coach. Been fired, didn't work out as an defensive-minded head coach.
Matt Nagy, former head coach with the Bears, somehow got Mitch Trubisky to two playoffs. Like, yeah, there's this experience there.
It's just interesting how we sit around and we talk about it and accept, and are just, everybody's, oh, yeah, it's good, man. It's great. Yeah, it makes sense. And then you look at the deeper you get into the playoffs, the more proven offensive and defensive minds you have that are rocking and rolling.
I said this in the tease also. Do you think the Texans are in a spot in which C.J. Stroud should have some input in the hiring process? Guy Gene on YouTube and Twitch said, if the Texans believe C.J. Stroud is the guy, not letting Stroud have input on the next offensive coordinator could strain that relationship.
Yeah, and I just disagree. I disagree. I think the worst thing the Texans could do right now is let an inexperienced, unproven quarterback that I don't believe is even the undisputed leader of your football team on the offensive side of the football. That's my personal opinion. But I think the worst thing the Texans could do would be to let him have say. Now, you take his skill set. And you take him first and foremost into consideration, sure. But when I hear let him have say so, I'm talking about in the room. Hey, CJ, what do you think about this guy? Before I hire this guy, here's my three guys. What do you think about each one of them? Nah, I can't do that. I think CJ Stroud is the guy for the next 10 years. I'm still fairly confident in that. Do I think he's reached a point in the league where he needs to be treated like the top five quarterbacks in the league? Nah, I'm good. He ain't there yet for me.
You
consideration
got top five. Huh?
Yes, I mean, look, I mean, here's the deal. I know we made a lot about C.J. Stroud's legs, and that's great, whatever. But the reality of it is C.J. Stroud is an elite pocket passing quarterback. Should you take that into consideration when you hire the guy? Should you not, or do you want to go out and hire Greg Roman? No. No, I mean, that doesn't seem like a great fit. I mean, I'm going to take CJ's strengths into consideration.
He did give Justin Herbert his best year ever.
Yeah, those great. No, yeah, no, it was a really good year. But I think if you look at like his good years, he's had mobile quarterbacks that are going to run the football. In fact, I can't believe that they didn't do that more this year with him, right? So I think you take it. The overall point is, I think you take CJ strongly into consideration. He is absolutely a priority in making this hire. But do you get his approval? Nah, hell no.
One, I want to say, I think he is having input.
Oh, I agree.
If I had to make a bet, I think he is. I'm not saying he's going in and making the decision, but I think he does have input. I think there is conversations being had. And I think probably more than you would be comfortable.
I agree. 100%. I believe you. I'm with you,
Ryan. And the way that I think they're going about things, I think it is a priority for them. And I know when I say this, it may sound like duh, but I think it is a priority for them that it is somebody that CJ, personality-wise and everything, is extremely comfortable with. And if you can kind of understand what that means, like somebody he is really comfortable with, right? I'm not saying that CJ is above being challenged. I think it does need to be somebody who can challenge CJ in a way that CJ will be comfortable. If that makes sense.
Yeah. No. I think challenging CJ. I think challenging the captains on the offensive side of the football is absolutely paramount next year.
But
not
I think
just the captains, the highest paid and the veterans on this team.
But I think it's got to be somebody that can do it in a way that they're comfortable doing it.
Mm.
They're comfortable they want. That's where I think we differ in. And I think that's why we're seeing the names that we're seeing.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that's what the Texans do and how they're handling it. I don't think that's not the way that I would handle it. I don't think that's the way that it needs to be handled. I don't think, like, you got some really, really, really talented dudes on the offensive side of the football. Sure, you got to go make some changes. You got to hire and obviously an OC. You got to hire an O-line coach. You got to go bring in a backup running back that's not Damian Pierce and Dare Ogunbowale. You got to go get another receiver. You know, there's some things the middle offensive line has to be addressed, but the right offensive coordinator come in here and demand a certain level of accountability and commitment and participation. Again, starting as soon as the Super Bowl's over, yeah, you could move mountains with this offense you got.
Yeah, someone text in, it's not a challenge if you're comfortable. There's some people that think it can't be. There are some people who challenge in different approaches. And I think the Texans are looking for a certain approach in how they challenge people. Right? We can see it. DeMeco challenges people differently than maybe other coaches we've seen. All right, coming up as we continue, let's get ready for day two, man. Santiago, here we go. Day two, see if he can win you some money. We'll look at what he did yesterday. Ignored. Oh God, he's going hard for one. All right, we'll see what he does there. But we'll get best bet, see if he can make you a little bit more money. And we got to look at them Rockets last night. They are rolling. The expectations have shifted and changed. But we saw last night at the end of the game maybe what their issue is. We'll discuss that next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Coming up behind us, Area 45. Make sure you stay tuned for the fellas. Area 45, 6 to 10, damn near every night behind us right now. 6 to 10, Bajani, Creighton, usually Chris Santiago. Are you in tonight again?
No.
All right. No. Byron in the
Colin,
place.
Colin.
Oh, that's right. I saw Colin. Chicken and rice. Yeah, Colin's in the building. He's holding it down with the fellas. So stay tuned behind us. 6 to 10, Area 45 every night. And Chris, who is stepping in for T-Mill's Best Bets. What did you go yesterday? Ooh, 2 for 5, is that what that was?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 2 for 5.
Oh, you can come back from that.
Yep.
You need a little 4 for 5 night tonight.
Jalen Green helped you out. Donovan Mitchell helped you out.
Rockets money line didn't help
you
out.
Yeah, that Rockets magic game you really hate. Really threw yourself at, just didn't quite turn it around for you.
And then the Banchero one.
That was 1 point off, man. And it was weird.
That's how good Vegas is, man. Mm-hmm. You wanna be on the right side of that 1 point, man. Just like I need to be I need 9 out of Grayson tonight, baby. Not 10.
Yeah. I love when people send texts in like this. Hear me out.
I'm listening.
Like, oh, shoot, what is he about to say? Hear me out. If he somehow agreed to it, would you be opposed to having Peyton Manning as the offensive coordinator? Look, but I just, like, I mean, of course, sure. it's like, when you say hear me out, like when I hear that, it's almost like Peyton's just sitting over there just waiting. Just waiting for somebody to check in on him to give him a shot. I think Peyton Manning, there's not too many jobs in football that Peyton Manning couldn't go get if he wanted right now. I think Peyton Manning could be a general manager somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think Peyton Manning could be an offensive coordinator, could be a coach. You know, I think Peyton Manning could fool around and be a coach, a head coach. I think people regard him that highly.
Yes.
That they think so. So, hey, yeah, hell, man, we're hearing you out. Shoot. Pull time out of there, too. Pull time out of the booth. Yeah, it ain't that. Listen, I'm going to tell you what. If Peyton Manning.
I would be heated.
If what?
Peyton Manning. Hired Peyton Manning.
You'd be hot?
Hell, yeah. He ain't been in a game? He been talking to Eli Manning on Monday Night Football with Bill Belichick? He ain't been in a game? Yeah. I mean, man, you got it. You got to be in the game, and as something as big as a play caller. Yeah, man. I mean,
I let him warm up with it. I let him warm up to it a little bit.
Mm.
Yeah, you got Grant. You got Grant over him.
Who?
Grant. Oh, Grant, assistant to the assistant.
Boy, he'd be on top of this list.
I'm just saying it. I'm just saying it. Hell, I mean, people have called plays.
Yeah, look, I guess my overall, like, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot that would have to be done, man. Like, I mean, I don't even know. Does he have a playbook? Does Peyton have his playbook together?
Oh, Peyton, come on, man. Peyton was the offensive coordinator for four years in Denver.
He just take that old Denver playbook and pull that thing out?
Hell yeah, I think CJ can run that.
That bootleg?
Yeah, he was the OC over there. Adam Gase was over there just chilling with a hat and getting jobs. All right, so the Rockets lose last night.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, they won five in a row. Obviously, it's 82 games. You ain't going to win them all. But, and if you did miss it, this is how it sounded in a tight game, a very, very entertaining game, 120-119, back and forth, especially in the second half. This is how it sounded.
Houston down by one. Van Vliet fought three, takes a three for the lead. Inside they fight. Buzzer game. The Grizzlies have won.
Got Kevin Harlan last night on the call, TNT. So the Grizzlies win. They pull it out. And to me, I think what we kind of saw, and I think this is going to be a question. And right now, especially if they keep this team the way it is, that I think there are a lot of you who want that. Just keep it like it is. I heard Sean Pendergast saying, don't change anything. Keep it like it is. I would just say what we saw last night I think will only heighten in the playoffs because teams are game planning for you every single night. They know you. You've got usually better coaches and better players you're playing against. And so they really will know your tendencies and try to force you out of that. So it really enhances to have somebody at the end of the games that you feel really good about or that you can trust that can make plays, whether that's for himself or someone else. That's what we saw yesterday that Clint stands out as. Whew, they get down in it, their final three possessions. Somehow the ball continued to end in Fred VanVleet's hands. Yep. And he's their point guard, but that would not be the one you would say, all right, coming down the stretch, trying to close a game out, this is who we want to have the ball to make plays and make decisions. Because I think he's probably the one you want to kick it out to and not the one you want trying to make the play.
Yeah, look, I think last night was disappointing on several fronts. I think, you know, it wasn't Ime Udoka's finest moment. Twice out of timeouts in the last three possessions, you end up with Van Vliet getting the ball and taking step back threes, and one of them he slipped on trying to drive to the bucket, and it was a turnover, right? Or I don't know if he's trying to drive to the bucket to the right side there. I don't know if he's trying to kick it or what he was doing, but I don't think it was Ime Udoka's finest moment. It clearly was not Fred VanVleet's, you know, finest moment. I love Fred VanVleet on this team to insert into action when the push in the basketball, the aggressiveness has gotten a tad bit out of control. Get on the court, settle everything down, settle the waters, and let's either keep the momentum or let's give ourselves an opportunity to gather the momentum. Let's slow the pace. Like that guy, I love Fred VanVleet there and inserting him there. I do not like him at all three straight times having the ball in his hands first and foremost with the game on the line. Like to get a bucket, last shot, game on the line, I don't like the ball starting there. Not three times and twice dead out of timeouts. Like that can't happen. But the bigger point, which you made, is like that was an opportunity for whoever, whether it's Amen Thompson or it's Jalen Green, one of those two dudes to go get the ball, tell everybody else to get the hell out of the way, and go get a bucket. Whether you make it or not is irrelevant, but go get a bucket, right? To me, Fred VanVleet, one time is enough. Three times, he's the fourth guy, and that fourth maybe even being generous.
Dylan Brooks, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, depending on who's hot that night, I mean, it could be somebody else. But if you just cold turkey name guys off the Rockets right now, I would rather Jalen Green, obviously, Şengün and clearly Amen Thompson. I'd rather those three guys have the ball first and be setting up or creating out of the gate so the defense doesn't dictate what the hell happens, right? And again, it's this one time with Van Vliet, cool, no problem. Twice, all right, I got you. Three times, what are we doing, right? So I don't think that was anybody's finest moment. And I think if they had it to do over again, Ime Udoka would make sure that one of those other guys got to rock in their hand at least once.
Yeah, to kind of go with your point, the last three possessions, 52 seconds, Van Vliet has a turnover. Then they come back, get it back, 15 seconds. He shoots a step back over one of the league's best defending centers in the game, and Jaren Jackson center, four or five, whatever he is. He's versatile, could play either one of them, but he is a former defensive player of the year and two-time block leader in the league. Tries to shoot a step back over him, and then with 2 seconds left, in fairness, Udoka said that he drew up the play for Amen Thompson to get it. He wasn't able to get it. Fred took the last one. Right. And that is just something they're going to have to deal with. Obviously, you'd rather have Jalen Green. I will also be fair and say Shingun was not available. He didn't play last night. But still, even, man, getting it to your center is not – hell, I would say this. As you know, Chris, who is the Denver Nuggets' best player?
Nikola Jokic.
Who's the best player in basketball?
I mean, you could argue Nikola Jokic or SGA.
Yes, but Jokic, I would think more people would say what he has done here.
Right.
He's won the MVP 3-4 times. Who does Denver go to at the end of the game? In a big moment, who has the ball in their hand?
Nikola Jokic.
Jokic, Murray.
Murray, yep.
Yep, many times. Those two guys, right? We saw on one end, even though they had their best player hurt in John Morant, we saw on one end, down the stretch, you go back and look, Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bane, they both had the ball in their hands, got to their spots, and that's where the shots came from. Right? It wasn't coming from the third or fourth option. It was coming from those guys. And for the Rockets, as Clint just said, maybe he's fourth, and hell, you could argue fifth. Someone just texted in, shout out to Dylan Brooks for playing his ass off. Maybe that's a route.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe just put it up on the rim and just let Tyrese Eason go up because nobody refuses to block him out. Good God almighty. But I mean, they knew where they were going. And right now, like to me, that is, if we are looking at the Rockets and we are now establishing new expectations and you start to look ahead because they're going to be in the playoffs. They're going to be a top four seed. They're going to be in the playoffs. Who is it? Not just the final possession. Who is it? Down the stretch of games, you want the ball to be in and making decisions. I am hoping it's Amen Thompson because I do think Amen and Shingun, I think both of them make the best decisions.
You want it to be them too, and you also want to include Jalen Green, to me, at least to me.
Yeah, no, Jalen can go get his own shot. I just sometimes I wonder if it's going to be the right play and how good of a shot it's going to be. But like, yeah, I think that is the big thing. But again, nothing to go crazy and lose your mind about.
Oh no,
a loss. But that is just something to look at,
especially come playoff time.
Come playoff time, look at, you got three straight possessions, and it's in Fred's hands. And not just in France and to take the shot and make the final decision. All right, coming up again, I see him in the studio. If you're on YouTube and Twitch, you can see our guy, old Sean Bajani in the building. Area 45 coming up behind us. But the last one of the week. Let's see what my man did. Last night, we'll forget about it. All right. He missed three.
Flush it.
Two for five. Go. Hey, next one. What are your best bets? What's T-Mill's best bets by way of Chris Santiago tonight?
All right, so today I got Suns money line. They play the Warriors. KD returning to what's their stadium called?
It's not returning. He didn't play for Chase, but I mean, I don't think Chase. It's Chase. I don't think it had been built when he was playing there. He was at Oracle. Yeah.
But he's returning to play against his former team. So I'm gonna go ahead and take the Suns. I'm gonna take the Bucks money line, and then I'm gonna take Norman Powell over 26.5 points, rebounds, and assists, and then I'm taking.
Okay, I like that.
And then I'm taking Jokic over 26.5 points. And he plays the 76ers. Norman Powell plays the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, and Embiid is still out, I believe.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And, like, normally with Jokic, he is funky because sometimes Jokic just says, you know what, I want to pass tonight, but not this year. Jokic is... I mean, he's top. He's like top five in every major category, off rebounds, assists, scoring. So I like that one a lot. And Norman Powell, he is what their leading scorer. He has really, really been really, really good.
You can never argue he should have been an All-Star, but
I think there's a conversation there. So I like those two especially. Beautiful. Nice. All right, Clint, see you Sunday as we head down to New Orleans. Chris, appreciate you. Tyler, have a good time. And everybody else, we appreciate you as well. I am Ron, the show Hughley, as always, Houston. We love you, baby.
If you so choose to follow me on social media, I certainly appreciate that as well, on Instagram and on Twitter, at Clint Sterner. Pretty easy. C-L-I-N-T-S-T-O-E-R-N-E-R. Go ahead and give me a follow. Appreciate you. Thank you. Talk to you next week.
You went for it all, Chris. I mean, spell the name.
Make sure, man. Silent O. Silent O gets you every time, man.
Yeah, that's Silent O.